Brian Welch grew up in Bakersfield, California in the 70s and 80s, an Ozzy Osbourne fan who took up the guitar at age 10. Now, somewhere along the way, as he tells it, guys said his head looked like it was too big for his body, and they started calling him Head. The name stuck. Head co-founded the legendary band Korn, and in 2004, he was ranked 26th on Guitar World's list of the 100 greatest heavy metal guitarists of all time. But his life would take some serious, sharp turns before I met him in the summer of 2007.
It was fun. You're a rock star. You know, if I'm going to go out there and say, you know, it wasn't fun, that's a lie. But it ended nowhere. You know, the path, the wisdom that I feel like I learned is that the path led nowhere, you know? You know, it was fun. It was a party. My dream came true, and I'm appreciative of that. And all the fans were awesome, and it led me. The party just overtook me, you know. And it was fun at first, you know, when you're in your 20s partying, you know. It was fun, but here I am now, today, happier.
Everybody has a dream, and your dream was to become a rock star. A lot of people dream about being a rock star and don't get to be one, so you're literally maybe one in a million in that regard. Did you know what it was going to be like when you got started?
No, it was pretty surreal when it happened. Like, we put the band together with Jonathan Davis and everything. When he came in, it was like, and we knew we were going to get a record deal. It was just, you know, it just something clicked, you know, and it was just a unique sound. We thought that we might sell like 300,000 or 400,000 records. You know, we had high expectations even then. But after a few tours, we went gold. You know, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. And it kept growing and growing, and it went platinum. And then the next album came out and entered number 3 Billboard. And then it just grew and grew. And it was just surreal how it happened.
Do you realize if you sold as many books as you were selling albums per week, you'd be many times way above Harry Potter territory?
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen with that, though.
You were selling, did I read in the book that you were actually selling at some point 100,000 albums a week?
Yeah, at a certain point, it was just, when our third album, Follow the Leader, came out, and we got a TRL, that's what did it, the MTV TRL, and the kids got a hold of it, and they just dug it, and we were, you know, like number 3 every day, and the album just went, it just shot up, you know. It even went, like, the first couple of weeks was like, I don't know, it was around 500,000, and then it went down to like 400, 300, then it leveled off at around 100,000 somewhere for a few months. And I was like, it was nuts. It was insane.
Were you using the music to express your pain?
Maybe. But I don't know. It was just, we were just having fun. We loved it. Music was in us, and we were just having fun. Jonathan used music to express pain and to deal with things in his childhood, you know. And it was an outlet, and we tapped into that with him, you know. We felt, so I think we were connected in some way like that. But, you know, majority of it was just having fun and doing what we always dreamed about doing and writing whatever came to our heads or hearts or however that went, you know.
But is it a life ultimately of excess, too much? Well, in your case, too much drugs. In other cases, people's cases, too much sex, too much fame, too much glory, too much free time on your hands. Is it just too much?
Yeah, it's not what people think it is. The rock star life is not what people think it is. I mean, the best part of the day is the hour and a half or 2 hours on stage, you know, and even that, you have your good days and bad days, you know. And we used to call it Groundhog's Day because it kept repeating, you know, the same things. And other people got into too much of things too, you know. Like one person would be alcohol, one person would be, I don't know, like eating too much or whatever. And, you know, and it's just too much of anything isn't good, you know, I think.
You have all this money, you have all the adulation, groupies everywhere, all the things that you could possibly want, and you're still unhappy.
Yeah, that's what got me depressed, I think, because I was like, okay, I got everything I ever dreamed about plus more. When, you know, And here I am, not happy with life, and I have everything. How can this be? I thought I was like a weirdo. I thought I was a freak, you know. So I just wanted to get drunk, and I was drinking the whole time. So I didn't put it together that if you drink a depressant, you know, alcohol over and over, that is, you're going to feel depressed. You know, it was like I was a teenager. I hit 20s, and then I got signed and got famous. So I never had a chance to grow up and get smart, really. It was just a party and playing music, and it was just nuts, man.
Now along comes a little child, and your life changes.
Yeah, I got married, and my wife got pregnant. I'd say it was right at the time when Follow the Leader started selling all those copies, and it was like we took off like huge. And then there was my family at home that was, I was like juggling. Because, you know, once we got that huge, it was like a demand. Boom, boom, we got to go. We got to go, and everybody wants us now. Or we got to go here and there. And so the touring got a little bit more crazier. But my family needed me at home more because, you know, my wife just had a kid. And so that was a battle right there. That brought a lot of the depression on, too, you know, being away from your family. And then when you go home, you're, like, hungover and feeling the depression from all the partying. And so it's like my kid wouldn't even recognize me some of the time, you know. She'd crawl over and sit on the other couch and like not even look at me and just go like that, and after like 2 hours she'd kind of come closer and then she'd sit on my lap. So it was like, what am I doing, you know? But the checks were great and the fans were great, so we're different because we had these childish life out there, and like we had rules, like the wives couldn't come out, the families couldn't come out more than 3 days in a row because, you know, the wives would talk and somebody might tell the other wife and there was girls around, and it's like if they didn't know, you know. It was really childish and just ridiculous.
So I guess at this point then, because your book reaches a low point, as you say, 2004, why aren't you dead now?
The kid just kept me wanting to hope for something better. But the drug sunk me so low that I didn't think I could even smile, you know, for real, like inside be happy. So I was like, I gotta get better for this kid. And I came close. I was mixing uppers and downers every day, and I don't know why I didn't die. You know, I don't know why. I've heard a lot of stories where people died like that. And, you know, I guess it's for this purpose, you know, what I'm doing today, why I didn't die.
Are people surprised to learn that you're a Christian?
They were at first, like I said, I just, you know, here we were, Korn, big band, and all of a sudden one day I'm on the internet with a beard looking like Jesus and saying, later, I'm Christian now, and so everybody freaked out, but I think they're okay with it now, you know. And I am an extremist. I was with the drugs, I was with the music and the touring, and I am with my faith, and it's not like I'm pushing it and on people. I just want to share it. I'm extreme in sharing it, you know, and I'm extreme how I dove into it. And like, I want to know the spiritual side. I want to get the deep things. I don't want religion. I don't want rules. I don't love going to church every Sunday because it's just, you know, I'm a rock and roll dude, you know. But my kid likes to go, and so we go, and I can have fun, you know, hearing anybody talk about the Lord, I can enjoy. But I want to teach this generation that it's not about the religion, it's about the relationship, and he's real. That's, you know, that's basically what I want to do.
Well, people are hungry for spirituality. They're not necessarily hungry for the Presbyterian experience or the Catholic experience, but they feel like you did, I think, a hunger for something deeper.
Yeah, it's got to be real, you know. And a lot of those, you know, it's just God bless them and the people enjoy them that are there, but it's just not up my alley, you know. And a lot of the people nowadays, it's not up their alley either. And I can relate to them. And it's spirituality is something that needs to be real and not stale, you know. And it's a relationship. I mean, I can't stress that enough. You know, God is real and He's good and He's merciful, and I love sharing everything in my life, and and the personal relationships and the personal things that happened to me, and I just like sharing it. It's so I can, you know, lead people to some positive things in life.
I'm Bill Thompson, and now I've heard everything.